This is a special podcast reporting. The Hoopers Arrive, brought to you by Journey South. I'm Mark Chenoweth. Few people have ever seen a whooping crane. It's the tallest flight-capable bird in North America, and back in 1941, their total population dwindled to only 15 birds. 15 birds stood between these beautiful 5-foot-tall white creatures with black wingtips and extinction. But people who cared became involved, and the Endangered Species Act was instituted, as well as making Aransas, Texas a national refuge where the birds migrate for the winter. Today, only about 400 hoopers exist in the wild, but that's a lot more than we had in 1941, including the less than 100 in the Eastern Introduced flock, which has been the work of groups like the International Crane Foundation and Operation Migration since 2001. They are part of the Hooping Crane Eastern Partnership, and in all, something like 400 wild hoopers live in North America today. On October 10th of 2010, the Operation Migration team left Nisita, Wisconsin, and led 10 young hooping cranes on a journey behind ultralight aircraft to two winter destinations in Florida. St. Mark's, arriving on December 15th, and Chasahowitzka National Wildlife Refuge, the second five arriving on January 15th, 2011. Over 500 people watched as two ultralights led these five young chicks over a crowd in the chilly morning at Marion County Regional Airport in Dunellen, south of Ocala. I asked some of those who witnessed this 10th migration flyover, the sixth at the Marion County Regional Airport, their thoughts.
You've seen other migrations and flyovers here at Dunellen, right?
The only difference is that there were so many fewer birds. We've seen as many as 15 or 16 here at a time. But it's still a thrilling experience. Absolutely.
It's worth coming out early in the morning, cold.
Have you been following this for a while?
For about 4 years now. And we think it's wonderful. We really do. We love to see it, and you know, the numbers have come back quite a bit, so this is great.
A lot of people don't know about the hooping cranes. Do you tell other people about it?
Yes, and we've brought another couple with us. Each year we try and bring another couple, and it's just awesome. And we've also walked in Prairie's Prairie up in Gainesville, and the Woodstock cranes were there, and one whooper. Sandhill cranes were there, yeah. And one whooper was left behind.
We don't really want them to be extinct because it'd be kind of sad. Just them getting wiped out.
Yes, it has inspired me to help with the conservation of the whooping cranes.
What would you like to do?
Like make a fundraiser to help.
You think you'd go into conservation work where you'd help birds and other animals that are endangered and ensure their habitat for the future?
Yes, it would be one of the many things that I do after like playing football. In the NFL.
I would really like to be, to help the birds by being dressed, like, you know, in the suits and stuff and helping them learn how to fly and everything and get, teach them how to eat. I think that would be really, really cool.
And where are you guys from? You're from the same school, right?
Yeah, we're all from Tampa Prep.
You were here last year, right? Some of you?
Well, the seventh graders last year, so the eighth graders this year were here.
What do you want to say about hooping cranes? Have they inspired you or given you any kind of motivation to do anything after you get out of school?
I think that they're really cool, and I would like to do some conservation work for it.
What do you think about hooping cranes?
Well, they're going to be extinct birds if we don't help now, that the birds may like die out. So that's a really bad thing, so we don't want that. These birds are very like amazing because they have a background story. So each one of them has, like, a different story to tell. Like, well, they can't talk, but they have a story to tell in their background about, like, how they grew up and how long it took them to fly and stuff like that.
You want them to be around for future generations to see also, right?
Yeah, because when I get older, if I have kids, I'd like to bring them out here to see it and show them what I'm about to see right now.
The three ultralight pilots with Operation Migration have been leading hooping cranes south from Wisconsin to Florida for nearly a decade, and I asked each pilot how this year's migration was different from past experiences, and if they had any significant moments or recollections from their over 1,200-mile journey with the birds. First, pilot and field supervisor Brooke Pennypacker, who talked by cell from St. Mark's as he was watching the birds during the holidays.
This year's migration was quicker. We did it faster. We got here earlier, so that was good. And actually, we got here more like when we used to get here years ago. In fact, when we got here this year, we caught a lot of people by surprise. Had to kind of explain that this is kind of when we used to get here. It's just been in the past few years that we've been getting here later and later. But the migration was great. The people were great. The birds were great. It was a good migration.
Ultralight pilot Richard Van Hoevelen.
It was different because it was a little easier to lead only 10 birds. We had a few different stops, so we got to meet some more new people, which were really great. That was a little different. And the weather, of course, was maybe a little more cooperative. I think also discovered some new limits to our flying abilities, and that probably helped speed things up a bit as well.
OM co-founder and lead pilot, Joe Duff.
The primary difference is it was faster. It just seemed to work better. We weren't stuck for so long at the first site. We couldn't use our very first site this year. We have a site that's only about 4 miles from the refuge, and we use it because it helps get the birds off the refuge and used to the migration. But it was flooded, so we didn't use that. So our first leg was a long ways away. And then the second leg wasn't a great leg either because the birds didn't want to follow us. But after that, they seemed to lock in nicely and behave themselves. And because there were only 10 birds, it was easier. We didn't have too many dropouts. The birds did really well, and we seemed to have better weather. It seemed to be a much drier year this year, so that was a nice thing about it. Now, the reason we've arrived here in late January, of course, is because we have to wait for the older birds to pass through the Chassahowitzka pen. If we arrive when they're there, then it causes a disturbance, and sometimes the birds get forced out of the pen. So we delay the arrival for the Chassahowitzka birds a bit, and that's why we're here now in January.
After a decade and well over 10,000 miles caring for, training, and leading young whooping cranes on migration, what do you regard as the most important thing you have learned and will take away? I asked first Brooke Pennypacker at St. Mark's.
I would say patience. You really have to be patient to do this. You have to be optimistic to do this. But I'd also say it's a great privilege to be able to do this, to work with these birds and to work with a lot of the people and meet a lot of the people that we meet as a result of the project. There's a lot to be grateful for, and I guess tenacity is another thing that you learn in a project like this. You just have to, keep going, put your head down, and keep pushing that peanut up the hill with your nose every day. And, you know, we have problems like everybody's got problems, and we overcome them, you know, year to year, day to day. And so I guess it's just, you know, the standard lessons that you learn, anybody learns in time with any endeavor, you know. Just keep at it long enough and hopefully you'll succeed.
Richard Van Hoevelen.
Probably is how to deal with people. Because to do a project like this, you're dealing with people all the time. There's no avoiding it. And you can't just concentrate on the birds. There's all these other influences that are coming from outside. So the most, I think, biggest thing I learned is how to deal with people.
Joe Duff.
That's a really difficult question because I've been migrating with birds since 1993. So, you know, that's 20 years, you know. It's a long time almost. So anyway, it's a tough one. I guess that an independent group like the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership can function. You know, we have U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Patuxent Wildlife Research Center and International Crane Foundation and OM and the refuges and Wisconsin DNR all working together and with no boss. You know, we don't work for them, they don't work for us. So despite all the differences of opinion, it's worked. And I think that's one of the things that impressed me the most. The fact that, we've actually flown well more than 10,000 miles with whooping cranes. You know, I didn't think that was ever possible. And I guess when I look back, what I look back at is this wild population that's actually migrating between Wisconsin and Florida. And I've got my fingers crossed that it'll do well into the future. So, there'll be a whole collection of memories, and I'm not sure which one will come to the surface. You know, it's hard to tell.
I asked Operation Migration pilots how they would sum up their years of working with and flying with the young whooping cranes. First, Brooke Pennypacker.
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. I don't know. you know, boy, you got me there. I think, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I could give you a good answer, to tell you the truth.
We can come back to that one.
I'd have to think about it.
We'll have to raise
that,
the stakes on it, though, the next time. It'll be worth more money, see, if you get it right.
So. It'll be... Yeah, I'm sorry, Mark.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Brooke is never at a loss for words. So I guess I stumped him, but he gave me an answer in short order, and we'll get back to Brooke. Ultralight pilot Richard Van Hovelen.
I think the biggest thing that I'll take away from it is how the birds taught me to be a better pilot and actually a better person.
OM co-founder and Ultralight lead pilot Joe Duff.
I think what we've done is an example of what can be done, and that's what I think I'm most proud of. You know, almost as important as saving the whooping cranes is a lesson it teaches. You know, if we're going, we're a small grassroots organization, yet we're working with international organizations. We're working with Fish and Wildlife and federal, state, and if we can do that, if we can work hard and form an organization that can work in conjunction with those people to save a species, then that's an accomplishment. You know, and when you reach, for instance, through Journey North, they reach 750,000 students a year. Our website has a huge audience, and that's an education tool. You know, so that's what's more important, I think, than actually saving the bird. I've often said that you know, with an ultralight, you can save one species, but with education, you can save them all. And you use the ultralight and the birds following it as an example. It's fairly easy to garner interest in a bird that's 5 feet tall and pure white and been around for millions of years and was down to 15, especially when it's following a modern contraption, you know, ultralight aircraft, and we go halfway across the country. It's easy to generate interest in that kind of species. But if you're going to save the whooping crane, you got to save its habitat. And when you save it for the whooping crane, you save it for also a lot of other less engaging and less charismatic creatures that are also critically important to the survival of the ecosystem and our survival. So you know, I think that's the most important lesson. I don't think I answered your question at all. What
sure
was
did.
It?
Don't worry about it. You nailed it.
Brooke did give me an answer, but he was still a bit taken by my question. I guess it was a good one.
That's a pretty big question. One of the things that I think a lot of us are proud of is the fact that this partnership was a partnership of both government and private nonprofits, and it came together to bring this bird back from the brink of extinction, and it acted as sort of a blueprint for other projects that could be done in the same way, you know, a cooperative effort. And, you know, I think that's one of the important things of the project, just the way it was organized and the way it was carried out, that you could plug in different endangered species in the same formula. And hopefully have a positive result.
I often wonder if I ask these guys intelligent questions. And once in a while, I get lucky, I guess. Finally, I asked each of the Operation Migration Ultralight pilots how they see the future of the Hoopers with all the work they've done these past 10 years and how they view what has been accomplished so far. Brooke.
I think one of the things that you learn at a project like this, that a lot of work and a lot of effort doesn't mean success necessarily. And there's a lot of chance involved, and you can work very hard for a very long time and not succeed. And, you know, it's sometimes easy to forget just how difficult this effort is, and there is no guarantee that it's going to succeed. We've done the best we could over a period of time. A lot of people have spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of devotion and sacrifice and all the rest of it. And the jury's still out whether it's going to succeed. You know, we have to keep the numbers up. We have to get the population increased, self-sustaining. And just because we worked for 10 years doesn't mean it is going to have a happy ending. So I think, you know, looking back, I think everybody has to realize that, you know, these projects, they're not slam dunks, you know. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to succeed, even if you do, you know, work hard and spend all the time and the money. It's, you know, it's up in the air. So, looking back at this project, I don't know if it's going to succeed. In 10 years, will there be a population of whooping cranes, or will these cranes have all died out? I don't know. And nothing's guaranteed. So I think that's something that, you have to sort of accept as part of the game. And if you're not willing to accept that, there's no sense to even start the game to begin with.
Richard?
It's a flagship species, of course. If we can save these, it helps save more habitat, which in turn helps save for other species as well. And it brings a huge awareness, and hopefully we can get more and more areas preserved for not only this species, but other species.
Finally, Joe.
We have an issue with breeding at Nisida National Wildlife Refuge because of the black fly. So there are various methods that could be used to fix that. We can use chemical corrections, or we can encourage the birds to nest later when the black flies are gone. That's a possibility. Both of those things are very promising. Really, a bird that's released from into the wild from captivity is not really well suited for life in the wild. You know, once they're raised in captivity for multiple generations, they're not good candidates for release. But that's the only choice you have. So we release those birds, and then we do whatever's necessary to get them to produce a wild generation. And once you've started to produce your F1s, the first generation raised in the wild, those birds adapt much better. And so we're expecting that will happen. And so we're working really hard to get that to work. There's a possibility of moving to a new site. We're looking at other potential sites that don't have black flies. But that wouldn't be a new population. That'd be part of the same population. So we don't know what the future holds. It's in the hands of the researchers and in the hands of whoever controls that kind of stuff. So we'll see. All right, very positive outlook, though, and we've come a long ways. We've cleared huge hurdles. We have a migratory population now, first one in well over 100 years. So we've done some good stuff. We just have to keep doing it and keep our nose to the grindstone and keep focused and move ahead.
While the team started with 13 birds last summer, one was lost to a respiratory condition, another was found dead in the pen the night before they left, a possible loss due to an encounter with a flockmate, the second time for such a loss in a decade of this work. In all, 1,285 miles were flown, though one bird suffered a wing injury en route, and while he was boxed and driven for much of the migration, he ultimately was brought back to Patuxent, Maryland, to become a role model bird for the chicks they hatch and raise there. A great deal of work, caring, devotion, and many resources, including countless hours, are invested in hatching, raising, and training these young whooping crane chicks. All the more senseless to those who are dedicated to this cause, when in early January it was discovered that the parallel project with young hoopers, where birds are released to fly with other hoopers in sandhills to make their initial journey south to Florida, that three dead birds from the Direct Autumn Release Program, DAR program by the International Crane Foundation, were discovered near Albany, Georgia. All three were necropsied and had been shot in mid to late December. A substantial reward of over $12,000 is being offered for anyone who can supply information leading to the successful prosecution and arrest of the person or persons who killed these three whooping crane chicks. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has a special law enforcement agent on the case, and you can call 404-763-7959 if you have any information about who might have shot these birds. You can still claim the reward and remain anonymous, and if you might know anything, please do call. This has been a special report about the conclusion of the successful migration of the class of 2010. Brought to you by Journey South. I'm Mark Chenoweth.